The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for hanging out with us for our latest podcast. Now, there's a lot going on in Major League Baseball. There have been some big free agent signings. This is also the day where players could potentially settle and avoid arbitration cases. And this is, in addition to that, International Signing Day. Now, we'll have stuff on the potential arbitration cases on our blog, raysradio.mlblogs.com. But for purposes of the podcast, we're going to be focusing on international signing. Later, we'll hear from Ben Badler, get some national perspective. He's with Baseball America, but joining us now, Juan Carlos Rodriguez, Rays Vice President. Carlos, thanks very much for being with us.
Anytime, Neil. Anytime. Happy to be here.
So tell me, with the change from July to January, which you guys had gotten so used to, how much really changed in terms of the signing period itself?
Well, a lot. In some ways, a lot has changed, and in other ways, not much has changed, just given the inactivity that usually happens from, or the inactivity that happened from, you know, whenever we had the hiatus and back in like March, April, all the way through through July when the kids would normally sign. But certainly, typically, we would sign these players. They'd come in July. They'd be integrated almost immediately into, you know, a lot of the team activity, the onboarding. There'd be an onboarding process. They'd participate in kind of like a parallel type league that runs parallel with the Dominican Summer League. And they'd have their first introduction, not to mention their first winter program. Obviously, that's something that was not able to happen this year. And a lot of our scouts, they were grounded for quite some time. So it was extra tricky to stay in contact and to monitor a lot of the players. But the credit to a lot of our guys, we were able to make sure that we, you know, we assured a nice process, and we're fortunate to end up with some players that we're really excited about.
And we'll touch on some of the players, Carlos, but I'm curious too, was it harder to keep a player on board that you had anticipated signing in July all the way to January? And if so, was it harder for the bigger name guys, or let's say the lesser name guys that maybe got better in the last 6 months and maybe someone else might have tried to get them with more bonus money?
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility that existed throughout this entire time. But the answer is, I think it was all challenging. And a lot of it depended on where the player was. If the player was in a place where they had the means and facility to train in safely. Some players, you know, were in some countries or some towns that were, they had less opportunity to go out and practice. And so, and with that also, like the risk of injury and you know, some of the guys, just the inactivity and the toll that can have on some of the players. So certainly a lot can, you know, can change with players. Especially if you look back at when you're in high school and how much you changed from your freshman to your sophomore to your junior year, that's essentially sort of like the stage in development physically where a lot of these kids are. And so, again, going back to my previous answer, there was a lot of heavy lifting with regards to the check-ins and just using any potential ways to keep track of these guys and make sure that the skills. We're trending in the direction that we kind of projected, throughout the course of the entire time, and certainly had to satisfy our projections in terms of where they've been and where they're going to for us to get it done. So it was all challenging. I think this entire year has been pretty challenging, but like I said, really excited about the group of players.
Let's touch on a couple of those players. Begin with Carlos Colmenares, a top five prospect, depending on, you know, where, on whose guide you're looking at. What makes him so special, and how difficult is it to convince a top five kid to sign? You've now done that, what, three times overall?
Yeah, we're really excited about Carlos. He's got a great first name, first of all. I do have to say that. That was immediately one of the more appealing things. But no, What makes him really exciting, unique, is he's a really well-rounded player with tools across the board, and several of them projecting to be plus. And that's a really unique, really unique combination, especially for a 16-year-old player, for an up-the-middle player, a shortstop. And what he can do, the chance to provide value on both sides of the ball, on defense, projects to be a really good defensive shortstop, can really throw plus arm across the diamond, can complete several types of plays with the arm strength. Also a player that can run. That's usually one of the last things to kind of to come to some of these players. And then certainly the bat. It's a left-handed bat with bat speed, ability to drive the ball to all fields. And when it's all said and done, the combination of bat, power, run, field, premium position, and the makeup, this kid is really determined. He's got a tremendous infectious smile, loves to work, loves to compete, and a player that we're just really excited about, joining the organization.
How hard is it to convince a top five kid, though, to sign? I mean, you've done it three times. Obviously, more recently was Wander Franco before Carlos.
Yeah, it's tough. It's always tough, especially at the top of the class. There's a lot of competition. We don't really think about it that much. We just try to do the best we can to identify talent that we feel we'll be able to develop and that will fit our organization. We have a really high replacement level. We have a lot of really good middle infielders. And so I think for us, a lot of it is just having clarity with the type of players that we feel will impact the organization and just putting our best foot forward, trying to do the work. But we have, again, a lot of the credit goes to the guys that we have on the ground, the work, the relationships that they've built over time to put us in position to do this. So definitely don't take it for granted. And hope that we can continue to add top of the market type talent year in and year out. Certainly that would bode well for us and the organization. And again, it's a credit to a lot of the guys on the ground and certainly something that we don't take for granted.
And that's one of two top 20 talents that you've been able to bring on board in this international signing period, the other being outfielder Johnny Puteron. What do you like so much about Johnny?
Yeah, Johnny is he's a five-tool type player. He's an outfielder now, where Carlos was a shortstop with five tools. And Johnny is a athletic, a lean, wiry, kind of a quick burst type player that has a chance to play center field. But like I mentioned, a really well-rounded skill set across the board, can run, can throw, has a lot of bat speed. Think he's going to have emerging power as well. And so anytime you talk about players that project to have five tools or four or five tools across the board, average or better, some of these being plus, I think that sort of is what differentiates a lot of the players from a lot of the other players that are sort of more towards the middle or the kind of the bottom end of the marketplace, because it's so rare for kids at that age to really have those tools developed. And with Johnny, there's a lot of youth and athleticism there that we hope that over time, the physical maturation will allow those tools to continue to trend even better.
Those two players, Perone and Colmenares, cover a fair chunk of your bonus pool money. How do you decide to divide up the rest of the group, and who are some kids that maybe you've signed that you're excited about that probably don't have, let's say, the hype of the top two players we talked about?
Yeah. So, really when it comes down to it, I don't think we go out predetermining exactly how we're going to spend the money. I think we, as a group, collectively, we all discuss, the players, what the marketplace looks like. We sort of look internally to make sure that we You know, we're able to create opportunity for a lot of those players to see playing time. But at the end of the day, it's way too competitive to get too cute, to pick and choose, you know, exactly how you're going to attack it. And so we really try to position ourselves, to evaluate and sign the best players, as many good players as possible. As simple as that sounds, it's basically, you know, kind of the thought process behind our approach. And the talent really dictates a lot of our, you know, the talent really dictates a lot of our approach. And so, one thing that's for certain is we, you know, we typically do take, you know, we diversify to some degree, actually to a large degree, with kind of how we, you know, how we approach like the rest of the market. And in this case, it's no surprise that we've added even more shortstops. But there's three guys in particular, Jesus Quevedo, who's like a really slick defensive shortstop, really fun to watch. A guy that he just loves playing defense. And, you know, one of those guys that just kind of really stands out, you know, just watching him play. Luis Ariza, from Venezuela, really, you know, really nice bat potential and bat performance. Really, a player that has a chance to play the middle of the infield and you know, hit a lot of doubles and that we hope can turn into to home runs in the future. But a player that we're really excited about and actually one of Colmenares's mates in the same program is a player named Gabriel Arias, and he's a player that actually. Watching Colmenares over and over again, like we sat there and watched this other guy that's taking ground balls with him. We're like, hey, that guy's pretty good too. And this is a player who's like, you know, running in the 6'7", you know, 6'8" range, can really throw across the diamond, really athletic. Also has some really good back components, and you know, players that we're kind of really excited about watching. You know, kind of develop going forward. So, you know, there's several other players that we plan on attacking over the next, you know, few months with the rest of our bonus pool money. But really the bar's been set pretty high by our group. And, you know, each year it becomes more and more challenging to clear that bar. But, you know, this is sort of what we're going to need to do to succeed, you know, in our division against the best.
And more of the pitching that you've acquired, Carlos, through this has been probably guys who were projectable or maybe weren't as big a bonus guy. The Yonny Chirinos, the Jose Alvarados, the Diego Castillos. What do you look for when you're signing a kid who's 16, 17 from a pitching standpoint when you know how far they are from the majors?
Yeah, we look for components, you know, components that are in place for us to be able to develop. First of all, we have a fabulous group that has a long track record to really develop pitching. I think there's great synergy, you know, between that group and between our scouts. And so I think that really helps. But we look for, you know, good athletes. We look for nice frames to be able to project on. We look for arm speed. We look for ability to spin the baseball. We look for you know, solid deliveries for, you know, for the guys to, you know, to be able to repeat and throw strikes. And so all those, you know, it's a sliding scale that, you know, and you're not gonna find, you know, all these guys that possess all these components, but there has to be some type of combination of these components as we look to add. But you know, even in contrasting Diego Castillo, who had components, but he already had like some raw velocity sort of in place as an older player. And Yonny Chirinos had, you know, he had good arm action and a really good feel and a guy who repeated his delivery and tremendous makeup. And so that's just a couple of the examples with some of the guys that we have. But, you know, certainly not perfect, but we, you know, I think we have a pretty good process in place and something that will continue to really depend on to supply and talent to the organization.
And the big names sign more often than not now, but you're going to be signing, you have the ability to sign players from now until December, correct?
Yes.
So, is that, hey, you've got some, potential late bloomer possibilities, or if a kid grows, how is that? How do you utilize that normally?
Absolutely. And we've been, we've been huge participants with a lot of the late bloomers, just because not everybody peaks, not everybody peaks on July 2nd. So to all of a sudden think that, that the players who weren't, who, weren't on the sort of on the prospect scene at that point is kind of silly to us. And so we scout year round. It doesn't matter if it's November, December, April, January. If it's talent and it's a player that we feel can, we can develop and has a chance to play in the majors, we're gonna explore ways to add those guys. And so certainly there's a lot of the guys that we've added sort of that to at least to date that we're kind of a little bit more famous, or not even necessarily more famous, but a little bit more well known, that we had to really compete on and add right away. But there's other players that we're going to continue to monitor throughout the rest of the year, and believe me, we're gonna work really hard to continue to add talent to the organization.
And lastly, Carlos, how do you plan for the next class? Because we don't even know yet whether the signing day is in July or whether they'll move it back to January, right?
Yeah, I think the anticipation is that we'll continue to, we'll have sort of this year to evaluate the players and have something potentially a similar signing date next year. Although we have to, maintain some flexibility, as especially given the pandemic and the situation that we're in. We ask our group to be flexible and to be responsive to the marketplace and certainly like just the situation as it exists today. But one thing about international scouting is you have your eye on yesterday. So basically like eligible guys that were already eligible to sign. We have your eye on the guys that are for the upcoming signing class, and as well as players sort of down the road. And so it's a really challenging thing that we ask our scouts to do, but it's the only way that we're going to be able to compete. And so we're going to work hard to scout 2021s and to start monitoring a lot of the players in the upcoming classes and aggregate as much footage and at bats and innings and whatever else history with these players. So that we can be in position to make a call on them.
Carlos, good stuff. Congratulations and continued success.
Thanks very much, Neil. Great talking to you as always.
Well, we appreciate the time of Juan Carlos Rodriguez on our podcast today to discuss International Signing Day and the start of this period. And joining us now, a guy who I'm hoping that you're following. He does terrific work on the international front, and that is Ben Badler of Baseball America. Ben, thanks for hanging out.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Neil. I appreciate it.
Normally, you're talking about the international signing period in July, and I know you're researching year-round, but how unique is it, and how big a change is it that we're now in January with the signing period for the first time?
Yeah, it's really an unusual time. Obviously, a lot of these kids thought they were going to be signing on July 2nd, and then everything just kind of came crashing down in March. So obviously, a lot of changes in baseball and obviously just in life in general. So yeah, the new signing date is different, and the whole process has been a little bit different this year with all the changes that happened from the pandemic.
Did the signing change a lot, though, Ben, in terms of where a player was going to sign? I mean, most of these players had committed, were ready to sign with a particular organization. Did it allow for a lot of unusual recruiting to go on, or what may have changed in the 6 months in terms of where a player may end up?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some changes that happened with some clubs and some some player movement changes, but I think for the most part, the players had already made commitments, and a lot of that didn't really change so much. But what happened was MLB put in a ban on in-person international scouting when the pandemic hit in March, and that lasted for 6 months right up until the end of September, and then after that, players were still not allowed to enter team facilities right up until this month, January 2021. So, obviously very understandable. MLB would want to limit who's coming into these team academies. It's a lot of risk for virus spread in that environment. So certainly understandable from a health and safety perspective. But, typically, teams would be monitoring the progress of their own upcoming international signing class, whether it's bringing players into their own academy for games or simulated games, workouts just to monitor their progress, or even just going out to the fields where these players train in their own academies and in their own programs, just to keep tabs on these guys. Because of the in-person international scouting ban from MLB, teams couldn't even really go in person to keep track of how these players are progressing, which might not sound like a huge deal over 4, 5, 6 months, but when we're talking about international players who are at least at that point 15, 16, and now 17 years old, a lot can change in that amount of time where players get stronger, they can get faster, their tools can improve, and at that age, they might still be growing an inch or two in that point. So it's pretty remarkable how much these players sometimes can change over a span of a few months. And this really was a ban on seeing players in person for several months. So I think it didn't really have a huge impact on who was signing where, but I think it did have an impact on teams' abilities to, just get a better gauge on the progress of their signing classes.
Ben, in terms of the signing class themselves, normally this is for players who have turned 16 by the signing date. Since the signing date has moved back, did that create a larger pool of players? I'm sure a lot of fans are wondering that. Or if you turned 16, let's say between July and January, are you now eligible for the next class but not this one?
Yeah, so the signing date changed, but the age eligibility for who's going to be signing in this class is not changing. So you'll see a lot of players signing January 15th who are 17 years old, who are would have been the top prospects we would typically see on July 2nd. They're just signing today. So the signing age didn't or the eligibility cutoffs didn't change. It's just the date itself was pushed back from July 2nd to January 15th.
And how good is this class in your mind compared to some of the others more recently? And what are the strengths of this class?
Yeah, I mean that's what's hard to say. So I mean I've seen a lot of the players in this class going back a few years now, and there's definitely some really talented players, especially a lot of young shortstops who are pretty exciting. Obviously, one of them really, really exciting, and Carlos Colmenares, the Venezuelan shortstop. But that what I was saying earlier, it makes it tough to gauge because it's hard to have a ton of confidence in getting updated reports on a lot of players right now, just because they haven't been scouted in a competitive environment in quite a while. And because of the pandemic and the scouting ban from MLB and some of the other restrictions, it's difficult to kind of get an updated look at a lot of these players the way we normally would for a typical international signing class or for a draft class. But certainly a lot of really talented shortstops, I think, in this group between players like Colmenares, Christian Hernandez, and Armando Cruz, kids who were heading to the Cubs and the Nationals, Yiddy Capay out of Cuba, Wilmon Diaz out of Venezuela, heading to the Dodgers, Christian Santana out of the Dominican Republic, heading to the Tigers. So again, it's tough to speak with a ton of certainty on these players given the context this year, but I certainly think there's a lot of really, really interesting shortstops in this year's class.
Well, since you brought up one of them, Carlos Colmenares, this is not the first time that the Rays are getting one of the better shortstops. Obviously, Wander Franco, now one of the best prospects in the game. How are they similar? How are they different from your mind?
Yeah, I think the similarity is they both just have really, really beautiful swings. Obviously, Franco's a switch hitter. Colmenares only hits from the left side, but it's just a really, really calm, easy swing. They both have a ton of bat speed, and then they're kind of similar, at least in stature. Colmenares, is about 5'9", 5'10". Not that huge of a guy, but kind of like Franco, just because he has so much bat speed and an easy swing, he's able to generate some pretty surprising power for a player his size. And then I think the baseball IQ with both players sticks out too. They're both really smart players. You see a lot of players that age typically who might look good in a in a workout environment, right? Like they look really good in BP or they look good fielding a ground ball. And Colmenares is, he certainly fits both of those. But there's a lot of players who actually, don't have the, whether it's the plate discipline or pitch recognition skills or other instincts for the game. The game starts and, those skills don't really translate to the game in a lot of cases for players. But I think with, from watching Franco when he was an amateur and seeing Colmenares as an amateur too, one of the things that sticks out about both of them is just the really high baseball acumen that both those guys have. It's not just somebody who's gonna, look good in a workout before the game. These are two players who really stick out for their skills in the game too.
And obviously, teams are limited in terms of how many top prospects they can, grab in an international signing class just because of the budget limitations. But Johnny Perón is another name that I see from the Dominican who's gotten a lot of attention, an outfielder. What's your take on him?
Yeah, he is one of the better athletes in the class. A lot of quick twitch and explosiveness to his actions. He's a plus runner, or if not better at this point. I think he has the speed to have really good range in center field. He's not the pure hitter that Colmenares is. I mean, that's Colmenares is one of the best pure hitters in the class, but I think. Piron, at least when I checked in on him last, it might take a little bit more time for the bat to come around, but he does have good bat speed. There's good physical projection left in the way he's built, so I think he's gonna get stronger and continue to grow into more power. So I think the hope with him is you have somebody who can stick in the middle of the diamond and play good defense in center field, and hope that with more time the bat continues to trend up with him.
And I think one of the things that has allowed the Rays to be successful, let's say on the international market, Ben, is that they've been very good at not only signing guys at the top of the class, but having success with guys, I wouldn't say at the bottom, but in terms of, they have developed well. Vidal Brujan, Yonny Chirinos, Diego Castillo, guys who did not sign for a lot. So are there some gems in this class that they are signing that you're really high on? And if so, whom?
Yeah, that's. I mean, they'll probably, like you said, Brujan is an interesting case because you don't, we do see players like you mentioned, like Diego Castillo. I think it's, we typically see a lot of pitchers, right, who don't sign for big bonuses, not necessarily just with the Rays, but throughout the game, because when you're signing kids at 16, 17 years old, it's really tough to project them, especially if we're talking about pitchers who are, if you're really good at 16, you're touching, 92, 93. But that's just, by the time they, sign a few years later, might be throwing, 97, 98 or 100 plus. So we see a lot of bargains with pitchers typically. And I think, not just in the Rays class, we'll probably see that in general. I think Brujan is a really good example of why the Rays have done a good job of scouting. So you don't see too many position players like that in the lower bonus range who turn into players like that. But one guy who's certainly not at the Colmenares, Piron type of bonus range, but at least one of my favorite players to watch is Jesus Quevedo, a Venezuelan shortstop who is just one of the smoothest fielding shortstops in the class. It's definitely more of a glove-oriented profile than anything else, but if the bat clicks, he's going to be fun to watch because he just has some of the best hands in the class. Just a really smooth, fluid defender at shortstop with really good instincts, and he certainly likes to make the flashy play too. So it's fun to watch him in the infield for sure.
And Ben, what changes going forward do you expect with international signing classes? Are we looking at a January to January year? Or are we eventually looking at a draft? What's your expectation on that and how it'll change the industry?
So technically, MLB has not changed the signing date yet for the upcoming international class. So that would still technically be July 2nd, 2021. But they have told teams, look, we almost certainly expect to move it back, and that makes the most, or it's really the only thing I can think of that makes sense at this point to move it back to January 15th, 2022. For the July 2nd, 2021 guys, because the this current signing class now starts January 15th, 2021, and runs through December 2021. So it doesn't really make any sense to have, with the way the bonus pools are structured, to have two signing periods overlapping each other. So I assume it's going to be moved back to January 15th, 2022. And then after that, whether it is whether it's in 2022 or 23, I mean, with the new CBA coming up, I do think that the MLB owners are going to be pushing for an international draft. They did that in the last CBA and the one before that too. But there was a midterm bargaining session that they were going to go through, that they were going to try to push for an international draft again. So I think the owners are going to really push for an international draft. This time, the Players Association has already, given the owners this hard capped signing bonus pool system. So I don't really see the union putting up much of a fight against an international draft. The international players are not union members, are not 40-man roster players. So I think eventually at some point the next CBA, the owners are going to be able to implement an international draft in exchange for some other concession that the Players Association will get for some other benefit for the 40-man roster guys.
Ben, good stuff. We appreciate some time talking about the latest class, and certainly appreciate following you and your work that you're doing on what's being done internationally.
Oh, thanks so much for the kind words, Neil. I appreciate it.
We certainly appreciate the time of Ben Badler of Baseball America and Rays VP Carlos Rodriguez. Again, if you're looking for info on the arbitration situation, go to our blog, raysradio.mlblogs.com. We'll have more podcasts as news occurs during the course of this offseason. We hope you're doing well, and we will chat with you soon.